Well, up next with this incredible story, we are following from Mexico City the release of slides purportedly showing aliens from Roswell. Don Schmidt joins us, noted author with Tom Carey. We'll be back with Don in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Don Schmidt, of course, is the former co-director of the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies. He served as director of special investigations for 10 years. Prior to that, he was also a special investigator for the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek for the International UFO Reporter. Don's research became the foundation for the movie Roswell, a film that, of course, brought all kinds of details of denial and disinformation of the 1947 episode. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Quite a day, Don, I hear, huh?
Well, so good to be back with you, George. And yes, it was. We're all exhausted, but it's a good exhaustion.
Richard was telling me they estimated about 7,000 people in attendance out there. Would you agree with that?
Yes, in fact, that was the same number that we were hearing before the beginning of the show, but the presentation. So it was more than even the theater itself had anticipated. So we were very pleased.
Some of your past books, of course, the Roswell Dig Diaries, Witness to Roswell. When you were there today, Don, I'm really fascinated by what it felt like being there when they were unveiling these slides.
Well, given that we've been working on this for the past 3 years, and I know a lot of the criticism has been that, well, we just didn't release them to our peers, just put them out there for everybody to voice an opinion. The biggest problem we had was just getting legitimate scientists, you know, back in the United States to even look at these, let alone treat them seriously. And, you know, the biggest problem we had was just the security involved. You know, physical evidence of controversial nature is not something you can just FedEx all over the country.
That's right.
Seeking professional opinions. So something as sensitive as this, you just don't let out of your sight. So it took us this long because we had to accompany the slides wherever we had them checked and analyzed. And we were traveling from one end of the country to the other. And finally, one of the anthropologists we met with, he said, you will not get an honest opinion from an American scientist. And I thought, how tragic, how sad.
Mm-hmm. How...
That's something that, you know, we deserve to do this in the United States, and yet in many ways we were almost rejected. We were forced to seek, you know, professional analysis elsewhere. So we've, you know, between Canada and Mexico, and then the event tonight in Mexico City being the culmination of all that. So it was there was great joy, relief as far as that it was mission accomplished, but yet it's still the beginning. There's much work yet to be done.
Let's go back just a little bit, if you would, Don, for some people who probably don't know anything about Roswell. Give us a very brief overview of the 1947 episode.
Well, it certainly has become a household word, you know, around the world in many respects. And I'm pleased to say that most people, when they hear the word Roswell, they don't think of a balloon. They don't think of wooden crash dummies. They do think of not only a flying saucer crash, but also, you know, government cover-up. So we certainly have been winning that war. But New Mexico was the hotbed of military activity back in 1947, post-World War II, and the 509th Atomic Bomb Wing, the 1st Atomic Bomb Squadron, was called in to investigate a crash of an unknown object by a local rancher, and within a couple of days, they put out that very famous press release that they had indeed captured a flying disc. Within 5 hours, they retracted that announcement, claimed it was just a radar reflector kite, suspended from a weather balloon, very off-the-shelf materials that even a five-year-old child would have recognized. And yet there was a major recovery operation. There were flights in and out transporting wreckage and bodies. And eventually, as we focused on the bodies, we learned from numerous first-hand witnesses, including military, that there was a survivor. And we know the story that the balloon explanation stood for 30 years until Jesse Marcel, the intelligence officer, talked to Stan Friedman and Leonard Stringfield and admitted that he was there. He was one of the people first sent out to investigate this, and that the balloon story was not the true story. That, as he put it, being familiar with all materials, both foreign and domestic, this was something not made on this earth.
And that blew the lid on that story, didn't it?
It certainly did. And then with later with our involvement and with the involvement of late Congressman Stephen Schiff, representing his own constituents in New Mexico, forcing the hand of the Air Force to come out with a third explanation, the Project Mogul report that came out in September of 1994. And they were still forced to address the bodies that were growing in number of witness reports. And in 1997, they came out with the wooden crash dummy explanation. So there are up to four official explanations. And I can confidently say that all the witnesses, everyone we've talked to, and we're now talking over 600 people, either directly or indirectly involved, and they are all standing behind the flying saucer explanation. They were there, they held it in their hands, they witnessed it, they saw how fathers and husbands had to live with this lie until, you know, the very last days of their lives, and then would provide deathbed testimonies. And the civilians, the way they were threatened, the children were threatened of these very people. And if anybody still believes it was over something as simple as a weather balloon device, here we are almost 70 years later, and the case is stronger than ever.
Now let's jump ahead to today, Don, where so many true experts in the field of ufology attended. Jaime Masson, you, Richard Dolan, and others. Tell us what happened today, what the event was like, how these pictures were unveiled to people, and what you think the reaction was.
Well, first of all, I can't say how proud and how pleased I am for all the people who were involved, for all the people who put this together, and especially for the scientists, the forensic medical pathologists. Dr. Jose Benitez, for example, he put on one of the most convincing, graphic, illustrated presentations as far as why this body is not human. And everything from demonstrating, for example, that there's no rotator socket in the shoulder, and that the ribs are far from the correct number, and there's no sternum, there's no breastbone, there's no pelvic bone, for example. The femur socket is not a human femur socket. The carpal bones in both the wrist and the ankle are much greater in number than a human wrist and ankle bone. There's no mammary glands, no nipples, for example. There's no kneecap. And the fact that that's their profession, that's what they specialize in. And in Dr. Benitez's case, for example, where he was able to show side by side a human being and this particular body, and how they differed on all these accounts. And it was just so convincing to the audience as well that he received by far the most resounding response. They were cheering. I mean, they were whistling. It was like, that's what they came to hear, that's what they came to see. And that, as he put it, as he said, he is willing to debate anyone as to his findings and his analysis. And he spent months, every day, working on this. And so, in many respects, we feel that, at least to a good portion of the audience, I think they left this evening thinking that this was all they needed to hear. They're convinced that this indeed demonstrates that there was a body that possibly serendipitously was photographed. The slides were hidden after all these years. Fortunately, were stumbled upon before they were totally discarded, thrown out, wind up beside in some waste dump site. And here we were tonight demonstrating before the world that when science is allowed to conduct legitimate scientific analysis, and when these individuals are brave enough to present their findings, and then beyond that, actually appear where they stand behind their reports. They stand up in front of the world and say, I stake my career on these findings. It was most impressive, George. It was truly impressive.
Now, the picture, Don, that we've got that Richard shared with us, and we're going to attempt to get the other ones from you or Richard
to some time
tomorrow. But this looks like the bean was under some incredible trauma, obviously.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that first impressed me when I first saw and handled the slides about 3 years ago. The head is decapitated. There's scorching, and there are, as far as there's damage to both sides of the face. The right leg is severed from the knee down. It's missing its left eye. The mouth is contorted to one side as though it had experienced a tremendous trauma at the time of its death. And I guess if one wants to take it a step further, you could say, well, it would suggest that it was involved in a crash.
Now,
and then we know what that would suggest that it ties it back to.
This picture, was it taken immediately after the 47 crash or several years later? Because it looks decomposed to me.
That is correct. There is some decomposition. There is also evidence of preservation. As Dr. Benitez said, that it was quite evident that the body had even been frozen. It had been preserved at one point. And another pathologist suggested, Richard Doble from Canada, the anthropologist, suggested that it was his opinion that the body may have been photographed within 6 months of its demise.
Which could explain the decomposition.
Precisely. And if we remember that some of the witnesses at Roswell talked about the concern of the quick decomposition, the smell, for example, whether at the hospital or at the hangar. And so not knowing if it's biological makeup, we really cannot determine how quickly or how differently the decomposition rates may have been. But nonetheless, you are correct. There was some decomposition. But even in the decomposition, there's no mummification. That's the main point that all of these scientists address tonight, that we are not dealing with the mummified remains of either a human being or something else. This body is not a mummy.
Could you kind of explain what the other slides look like?
The other slide, the second slide, is actually, it's a little tighter. It's got a tighter focus on the face. And so that's one of the reasons that none of the imagery related to the second slide was ever presented until tonight. Because it clearly, beyond even a little of the fuzziness of the first slide, it's like the contrast is much, much tighter, much sharper.
What does your gut tell you, Don? I know you've been working on this, as you said, 3 years. What does your gut tell you?
I was, as even the owners of the slides would tell you, I was the one skeptic. I was the one person that it took them, and I shouldn't say them, but I mean that it took me the longest to come around to accept that we might be dealing with something truly extraordinary. And until the science, the forensic, and the anthropological reports finally came to us within the last 2 months, I was still hedging on whether we should pronounce them as being directly linked to Roswell. And that was partly due to the fact that a number of skeptics were quickly suggesting that if these slides turned out to be bogus, that would be the death knell for Roswell, that automatically would bury Roswell once and for all. Well, if they're not connected to Roswell, then how can you say that it would then discredit Roswell? So it was wishful thinking on their part. And due to the time period, and as we just talked about, the trauma to the body and the proximity of Bernard and Hilda Ray, the photographers, and the fact that they also worked throughout New Mexico during that particular period of time, that if we were to take this into a court of law before a judge and jury, that unless someone could demonstrate other circumstances, other evidence suggesting another occasion, another set of circumstances which would provide it for this opportunity, one would have to conclude that, yes, there indeed is a direct link to Roswell.
What a remarkable possibility, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. And as we have been stating all day, we hope that this is just the beginning. That is, the slides will now be made available to strictly scientific analysis. And obviously, anybody with any consideration for old film, old slides, that we have to be very careful as far as the handling and the analysis of the slides. But we look forward to further substantiation, and we just see that it's going to be extremely difficult for the debunkers to go after these scientists who unanimously tonight all said that this body is not human.
We did a little checking ourselves, and the ektachrome slides were made and available in the 40s.
So that is correct.
Yep, that matches that. And I guess the people who took the slides, they're no longer with us?
No, long departed. They were, even long before that, divorced. The main photographer, the woman involved, Hilda Ray, she was an attorney originally out of Midland, Texas. Then she moved to Phoenix, Arizona. And it was very, you know, fortunate for us that someone preserved the slides, not knowing what was contained right within the box, the lid, the cover of the box, that she had disassembled the box, and she slid the slides into between the layers of the box and then re-glued the lid. So she clearly realized she had something extremely sensitive, that these were obviously something that she shouldn't have had, and that she made every effort to hide them, secure them, with the hope that someday, even posthumously, that they would be unveiled to the world. And that's what happened tonight.
Did she ever talk to family members about this?
There was no family. There were no
Nothing.
Children,
wow.
No siblings, unfortunately. So we only were able to find some former associates, friends who spoke so very highly of her. She was a very highly recognized female pilot back at that time, for example. She was flying into Europe. She was flying into Germany after World War II and attended a lot of the air shows throughout the country, which there are all types of slides that she recorded all of these trips. And so she was quite the accomplished individual, and also traveled in amongst very high circles, including what we have been able to determine more and more were the Eisenhowers, and we're getting more information that possibly even the Bushes.
Were there any follow-ups done outside of the work you've been doing in Masson? Has anybody else been able to work on these slides?
Well, I mentioned Professor Richard Doble up in Canada.
Yeah.
And two other forensic anthropologists also in Mexico. Again, I can't express my frustration more for the fact that here we have some of the greatest anthropologists in the world right here, back home, I should say, at the moment,
yeah,
in the United States.
I understand.
And they were telling us absolutely not. We wouldn't even tell them what was contained in the slides. And they would recognize our names, or they would immediately ask, is this about Roswell? And they would have nothing to do with it.
All right, stay with us, Don. We're going to take this quick break and come back and take some calls with you and continue talking about truly this incredible story. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Don Schmidt here as we talk about the incredible disclosure in Mexico City in front of 7,000 people in the audience and lots of people on the Internet, where they revealed some special slides that purportedly showed some of the extraterrestrial beings from the Roswell crash. of 1947. Somewhere along the line, Don, if this story is correct, these bodies must still be someplace, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, you certainly would expect the preservation of unique specimens someplace here on Earth. And I guess the other interesting point would be if that particular display, and it was a temporary display. We know that because there's a handwritten placard on either side of the body. And as much as we've tried, whether Dr. David Rudiak, who was most noted for working on the Ramey memo at the Balloon Press Conference, and Dr. Donald Burleson, Ray Downing at Studio Macbeth, who did the 3D imagery of the Shroud of Turin. Colonel Jeffrey Thau, former deputy commander at Wright-Patterson, he's presently at the Pentagon, and we asked him to even have the photo interpretation lab there try a hand at this placard, and none of them have been able to, you know, decipher any part of it, given that it's script, it's handwritten. But if indeed there was such a display, where is it today?
That's
the
question.
How come no one has been able to come forward and say and present the picture? Well, this is exactly, you know, what you people are, you know, promoting as being something alien. And I guess that's possible. That still may be the case. But over 800 mummy displays have been checked out, for example. And we checked out Palmer University in Iowa, because they have all types of skeletal displays. And we feel we performed due diligence in doing all we could to eliminate all possibilities. And then we went to the anthropologists, the pathologists, the forensic doctors, and we relied on them to just finally rip it apart, see what if you can come up with anything that we've missed. And tonight, again, was just wonderful to see, again, these professionals, these scientists, who are brave enough to step forward and say, we stand behind our findings, and this is not a human being.
In the picture with Roger Rainey in front of these pieces of what I think never came from the craft, now, I think that was just a mock-up that they just laid out there. What do you think,
Doc? Of course it was. Yeah. Of course it was. In fact, in two of the particular shots, Ramey is posed with his adjutant, Colonel Thomas DuBose. And before DuBose passed away, we have a sworn affidavit from him where he stated that they were the ones who substituted the balloon for the actual material. And he went further to say that the balloon was a hoax, that they never really displayed the real stuff.
In the original release, they said it was a disc, and then in the radio announcement, they also said it was a missile. It obviously could not have been a balloon.
Of course not, and especially when you consider that whether the civilians, the rancher, his neighbors, there was a state police officer by the name of Robert Scroggins, the Roswell Sheriff's Department, the fire department, and then leading all the way to the 509th Bomb Group headquartered at Roswell, right up to the base commander, Colonel William Blanchard, that no one was able to identify that debris, that wreckage. And that's why, one of the reasons they put out that press release. So it's like the very people who were in charge of the atomic bomb back at that time, they were so incompetent that they could not, again, identify, you know, just a very common material of a weather balloon device, whether it was Project Mogul or anything else. You're still talking about off-the-shelf materials that most anybody would immediately recognize.
When you wrote Witness to Roswell, what would you say at this point, Don, is still, for you, the most compelling aspect of this case?
At the moment, the slides aside for the moment, the deathbed testimonies, deathbeds which are admissible in a court of law,
yeah,
and that down to each and every one of these people, to their dying breaths, they're talking about the bodies. They're talking about the little people, the little men. Much to their credit, they don't call them aliens, they don't call them spacemen or anything of that sort. But when pressed on the topic, there's no denying. I mean, no, there's no question. They weren't human beings. They weren't from this planet, that type of response. So there again, we're talking about information that we could take into any court of law, and we believe we would win hands down.
Richard,
sadly, with the World War II generation, then you know that's really all we have left, are the deathbed testimonies.
Speaking of deathbed testimonies, Richard just told me that the mortician, Glenn Dennis, just died several days ago.
It's a week from today that he had passed away. And at the request of the family, they never posted the obituary notification. It was a private service, and it was KOB, an NBC affiliate up in Albuquerque, that happened to get the story. And they talked to the mayor. That was the only person in Roswell that they could get to even admit it.
He was one of the last.
He was one of the last. That's correct. And I think back, it was the end of 1990 that he first stepped forward and talked about his involvement. And he presented the story of the controversial nurse that described to him preliminary autopsy. And the terrible smell that they were going out into the hallway of the examination room, getting ill, and then going back to resume their work.
And he was told to get little caskets, right?
He did indeed receive phone calls from the base hospital. The base hospital did not have a mortuary officer at that time. So we don't know exactly who placed those calls, but the request was for child size caskets, and we even know the name of the contract truck driver who drove up to Amarillo, Texas, where they would get the caskets and brought them back to Roswell.
Let's go to the phones now. Joe in the Bronx, welcome to the program, Joe.
How you doing, George?
Good.
I wanted to ask Don Schmidt. Now, there was a surviving ET from the Roswell crash. Didn't they refer to him, or he liked to be referred to as J-Rod, and he was helping the military?
I know that's one of the contemporary accounts regarding, even a survivor being kept at Area 51. The information, though, that we have, if we rely on the testimony of the late Marion Magruder, and he described to his sons before he passed away in 1995, he was part of the War College, the class of 47-48. And we have the documents that confirm that he was assigned to a special project at Wright-Patterson in April of 1948. And what he disclosed to his sons before he died was that they were shown the survivor. They were actually allowed to see the survivor from Roswell, and the name that they referred to him by was Squiggly, that the body was so spindly, and that was just the name they came up with at that time.
Joe, thanks for the call. We're going out to Rye in Springfield, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Rye. Thanks.
Excuse me. Hi, Drudge. In all of the things I've heard about the Roswell thing, and then the book I bought on Area 51 here back about a year ago, I can't remember anything that I read about any blood chemistry that was done on these beings.
Was there any, Don?
I think the late Len Stringfield, who was really the pioneer of crash retrieval.
He sure was.
And he had spoken to a number of doctors, whether it was at Wright-Patterson or possibly a number of other military facilities. And when it came to, as far as specifically the hemoglobin, as far as the blood, the descriptions that it was clear or that in no way resembled as far as human blood. And the general, at least in Len's research, consensus was that it just didn't have specifically red blood cells in it.
I remember talking to him back around 1982, right around that time period. He initially was a public relations expert for a chemical company, wasn't he?
That is Adel Chemicals, I recall.
Yeah.
And he was a veteran of World War II. He was with the Counterintelligence Corps. I'll never forget one time when he described to me that he was on a battleship as a Japanese kamikaze was coming in, and he was on one of the guns. And as vividly as he described that, he was just firing for all he could, hoping to bring it down before it impacted the ship. So also a patriot and American hero, absolutely.
Sure was. We lost him. He died from lung cancer.
That is correct. And I can't deny, every time we were with him at his home in Cincinnati, he was
smoking,
he was puffing away.
Yep, he sure was. Let's go to Paducah, Kentucky. Paul, it's your turn. You're on with Don Schmidt on Coast to Coast.
Good morning.
Morning.
Gentlemen, I believe in that picture of the shelving material with the metallic hole and pre-drilled frame construction, freestanding metallic shelving, wasn't invented until the circa 1960, 1961. I believe if you find that out.
Well, if you're trying to determine the a specific brand or design from that time period, but as far as the engineers, the mechanical people who we've had examine and even tried to determine the size relationship to the body, that it dates back to the 40s.
Everything does. Dates back to the 40s.
Yes. Even the clothes, the reflection of the woman in the photograph, it's 1940s vintage.
Now, Don, after today's announcement, what happens next?
Well, we made the appeal tonight that the slides will be released for further scientific investigation. We would only hope that American scientists at least will be objective enough and scientific enough and curious enough to say, well, we now would like to take a look at these. Let's see if our analysis would match the Mexican and the Canadian. And we're never going to conclusively prove that this is an alien. And we're never going to be able to conclusively prove this is related to Roswell.
Right.
But until someone is able to demonstrate other circumstances or another, series of events that may have actually created not only this opportunity for the photographer or what we are looking at this time, I think we're going to have to presently stand on where the scientists tonight have placed this out for the world to consider, that we're dealing as far as with two slides depicting something that in their professional opinion does not represent any human malady, any human condition, nothing of any mummified remains, and nothing that would suggest that this is a being of any earthly origin.
Let's go next to Bob in Philadelphia, first-time caller. Get you in here, Bob. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Just wanted to ask if you've ever heard of the Matilda O'Donnell McElroy interview.
I've heard of it, and I may have even briefly seen some of it.
Tell us, give us a highlight, Bob,
yeah,
if you
please.
Well, basically, it's just about one of the aliens from the Roswell crash that happened to survive, and she was, I think she was like a nurse or something, and she was the only one that was able to speak with it telepathically, and the transcript goes on for a few days. They ask it questions. And then apparently after all said and done, a couple of people rush in to shock it, and it leaves its body. But it goes on to say there's a lot of things in it. It kind of sounds like Scientology just a little bit. But you'd have
Well,
to...
you're actually closer as far as in regards to that opinion than you know. You're talking about the book Interview with the Alien, and it's presented as though it's a nonfiction account of this nurse and her being assigned to, as you describe, spend time and actually conduct telepathic communication with the survivor from Roswell. Well, it's a work of fiction. In fact, we got the author to even admit that to us.
I've always wondered, Don, why the ETs didn't come back to pick up their lone surviving colleague.
Well, that's a good question, George, and we've often been asked that. And it's interesting to mention that when Dr. Lincoln LaPaz, the famous meteor expert, was assigned from Washington, he arrived in Roswell in September of 1947 with the assignment to determine the speed and trajectory of what had crashed. And I can assure your listeners that a balloon doesn't have speed and trajectory. But needless to say, there was a counterintelligence non-commissioned officer by the name of Master Sergeant Lewis Ricketts, who worked with him in the field for 3 weeks. And the way LaPaz would investigate a meteor strike is he would conduct triangulation. He would interview witnesses from all different vantage points and then triangulate. Well, they attempted the same thing with Roswell, and they, interestingly enough, learned from a lot of the ranchers in that area that they were having sightings for days thereafter, that they were witnessing glowing objects with beams of light projected down onto the desert floor. And whether this was some form of attempted rescue or just some type of search to confirm the final fate of this particular object, one can only guess. But yes, indeed, it seems, based on those witnesses, that there may indeed have been some attempted rescue.
Don, let's keep in touch with us. Maybe you and Richard can work at getting us several more of those slides that we can post on the website.
Will do, George, and we will see you at Contact in the Desert.
Oh, that's right. It's coming up in a few weeks.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
All right, my friend. Don Schmidt, incredible story. 7,000 people in attendance in Mexico City witnessing the unveiling of these slides, purportedly showing the dead bodies of the ETs during the episode in Roswell, which occurred in July of 1947. Amazing story. Continue to watch coasttocoastam.com. We'll get the rest of those slides up there over the next day or so. Up next, droughts and HAARP. Are they together? We'll be back.